Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, the managing editor of the NBA page, with you as always. And today, we're breaking down the Eastern Conference, which is packed. It's got some tiers, but it's got some packed, and it's just packed in. Got a lot of questions, a lot of teams we don't quite understand. And to do that, we've got a couple of guys with us. First off, Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington. How you doing, Chase?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. And Keith, it's good to meet you. I've enjoyed your work for many years.
Yeah, the other guy here is Keith Smith from, Yahoo Sports and Real GM. And Keith, like you're like 18 other places. Where are you, Keith?
That's enough for now. We don't need to take any more time. But yeah, it's great to meet you too, Chase. Good to be back with you, Kirk.
Well, let's get into this. There's a lot of questions about the Eastern Conference in this playoff chase, but I'm going to start with a question for you, Keith. Can you just explain Boston to me?
Let's. You guys can go take a break for the next hour. Let me start with, I was not super high on the Celtics this year to begin with. I thought that they were going to be around the fifth best team in the East at best. Anyway, they may still finish there. They're not out of range for that. But the only thing consistent about them is their inconsistency. They do not show up every game to play. We've seen that in the last couple games as they got blown out by the Hornets and then they lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then injuries are the other part of it. So even when fully healthy, well, let me rephrase that, because they've never been fully healthy,
right?
But even when mostly healthy, they're inconsistent. And then you take a key player or two out of the mix and they're just not a very good team. And Jaylen Brown put it really well after last night's game when he said, we have to play well to win. It is not enough for us to just show up. But we know, teams like Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Utah, Phoenix, some games they can just kind of show up and overwhelm the opponent and win anyway. Boston is not in that position. And when you add all that up, that, tells you that this is a team that's, just above 500.
How much of that is Kemba? Like, obviously he missed a chunk of time at the start of the season trying to get healthy and he didn't quite seem right for a long time. He seemed better lately, but still maybe not what you're paying him to do. Maybe not what was hoped for. And he's been a little up and down.
Yeah, I think more lately he's been good, but now he's hurt again, and he's got this left side strain that cost him last night's game. He's not going to play again on Wednesday night, so that's a couple in a row, and then he doesn't play on the second half of back-to-back games, which that'll get removed once the playoffs come, so that's caused some kind of in and out and roster shuffling all year when he's been there. But he kind of caught his groove, got back to being the guy we expect, but the challenge has been, like it was a little bit last year, is, all right, we're feeling good, Kemba's here, and now all of a sudden he's hurt again. So there's definitely some in there. And then I think defensively they just don't have the defensive pieces this year to work around him being in the lineup like they've had in years past, where they could kind of switch around him, they could hide him. They got very adept. This really started with the Isaiah Thomas teams, but and the Kyrie Irving teams as well, of doing jump switches and kind of scramming guys out of mismatches and those things. But this year's talent level is just not quite up to par as the last several iterations, so that's caused some issues with working around Kemba in the lineup.
Chase, do you look at Boston and think, man, yeah, but still, like, you look at those top, obviously there's a top three tier with Nets and Sixers and Bucks in the East, But I look at that and I'm still like, Boston might still be the fourth best team, especially in a playoff setting.
I would say that, you know, I think it has been about injuries, and I've seen a lot of parallels between them and the team that I cover mostly, which is the Washington Wizards, and that there's been injuries that have led to inconsistency. And also, they're one of the teams that were hit the hardest by COVID-19. And I think just generally from firsthand experience, I think the effects on the players that have had it has been a little bit underrated and underestimated this season. You know, particularly with the Wizards, you know, they missed a bunch of games and then they came back, but the players who had it, it took them a long time after that to regain their conditioning. And there's still guys who are dealing with it. We've heard Jason Tatum has to use an inhaler before games. With them, though, there's a little bit of irony using any excuse like that, because I think Brad Stevens, one of the most impressive things about his tenure there is that he's been able to keep them afloat and keep it rolling no matter who's in the lineup, whether it's injuries or offseason acquisitions and faces changing there. They've always kind of been able to keep it going. And I do look at the fact that they're top 12 in both offensive and defensive rating as an encouraging sign. And I think it really comes down to health. Like Keith said, if they can get healthy at the right time, then I think there's certainly an argument to be made that they're a top four team. And then maybe the divide between them and the fifth team is pretty big. Right now, it looks like it's obviously a tier where there's three teams and then everyone else in the Eastern Conference. But Boston, really, it comes down to health. I just wouldn't bet against them. I think it's still a little bit too early based on their prior success and the coach that they have in Brad Stevens.
Yeah, the coaching, I think, certainly helps. Does Boston look at this and think, man, is there a matchup? Let's put it this way. Is there a matchup that they want, or a matchup that they really want to avoid? Or I mean, outside of obviously, like, nobody wants to see fully healthy Brooklyn. Like, is there a team in particular that they think they have a better shot against?
Yeah, I think they feel good if they draw Milwaukee or Philadelphia. Ideally, they'd rather draw either one in the second round after getting through a first-round series if they're in the 4-5 line. But I think they feel good against those guys because I think they've had a lot of success against Milwaukee this season. You know, they've played quite well against the Bucks. And then Philadelphia, that's more historical success against them. This year hasn't gone their way, but they've also never played them approaching anything near full health. I don't know that Jason Tatum has played in any of the games against Philadelphia, and if he has, it was only one, maybe. So I think they feel really good in that matchup as well. They don't have an answer for Joel Embiid, but they've never had an answer for Joel Embiid. It's a different Embiid this year, right? He doesn't go hard and dominate you through three quarters and then tire out, but it's one of those things where I think they feel like, hey, we can work around that fairly well. It's just whether or not they get there. That's kind of the bigger question, because this group has the opportunity where I believe when they say things like we feel good and we feel like we can really push forward, but I also look at it and say, yeah, and you've been kind of saying that for 60 games now this season.
Yeah.
And you know, every time we feel good, you fall apart.
Does anybody have an answer for Joel Embiid? I mean, especially this Joel Embiid who will kill you from the mid-range and face you up and not just back you down, and is passing out of it's a little bit better. I'm just curious if there's a team out there that you think, Embiid feels like he could be the difference maker in the East. I'm probably not going to pick Philly to come out of there, because I'm not sure if you take him away that they've got enough plan B around him. But I don't know that, like, he is capable of winning a series or two easily, maybe all of them.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really has an answer for him. I think he is that good, and I think a lot of it comes down to this year for Philly is, what did the other guys do? Does Ben Simmons show up in the playoffs? Is Tobias Harris a 20-point-per-game scorer in the playoffs? Are they going to get enough shooting from guys who are still, you know, outside of Curry and Green? It's still a very questionable group of, you know, off-ball players there. Yeah. I thought Daryl Morey would do more at the trade deadline. We know he was interested in, you know, Kyle Lowry and making other big moves, but I thought it, barring that, he would make some more smaller moves around the edges, and those didn't really come to pass. So, you know, I think it's less about Embiid than ever, because I think you're going to get a full four quarters out of good Joel Embiid. You're going to get 40 minutes a night out of him where he looks really good. It's just, you know, can the other guys step up? And in years past, it's always been, can the other guys step up? And what is Embiid going to give you past, say, minute 30 or so? You know, is that going to wipe him out and have him done? Yeah. So, yeah, but I think that's what makes them interesting against Brooklyn, because Brooklyn really, no one has an answer for Embiid, but Brooklyn really doesn't have an answer for Embiid.
No, I think that that's actually a very fascinating matchup just because of that, because I don't know with Embiid if they have an answer. I think we know DeAndre Jordan's not that answer. I love Claxton, but he's just going to get all physically overwhelmed. I don't know. I still can't pick three to go all the way through, because I'm like Keith, I'm not totally sold on their shooting. And we saw it the other night when the double started coming. If the other guys aren't hitting, you know, Embiid's making the right play. He's passing out. He's doing what he can. But if Tobias isn't the great secondary shot creator, and if the shots aren't falling for Curry or whoever, then it's not enough.
Well, I think in theory, Milwaukee would be the team, just with Giannis and Brooke Lopez, and also wing defenders who can take away a little bit of the space on the floor. But with the way Joel Embiid has been playing this year, I mean, it's as good as I've seen any center play in a long time, his ability to step out and shoot. I mean, he's got a step back three now. He's a killer in the mid range. Obviously, his size is a major problem down low. But I think Milwaukee would probably be the team, just because of the defense that they have and the versatility and the fact that they have a guy in Giannis who was the defensive player of the year, and a little bit of depth at that position if you have to give up some fouls. You know, when you talk about Brooklyn and their defense, that's going to be a major question, I think, no matter who they're playing. I mean, yeah, their best path is obviously they got to be healthy and they've got to score an inordinate amount of points, because their defense is ranked 25th in efficiency. And that's just not been the recipe to win titles. You know, if you look at the last 10 championship teams, all of them have been top 11 in defensive rating. And the only team that was 11th was the 2017-18 Warriors. But they had even more talent than Brooklyn has. They had Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, all those guys. And if you look in the postseason that year, they had the number one defensive rating. So they had, you know, Draymond Green, who's the defensive player of the year. They had Klay Thompson, who is a really good defender at his position. And they were able to lock down and become the best defense in the NBA when it mattered the most. And I don't think that Brooklyn has the personnel to, you know, go into the postseason ranked 25th in defense and all of a sudden become an elite defense. I don't think they have the players to do that. Their top-end talent is very offensive-oriented, and they have depth and they have some good defensive players, but it's nothing like what Golden State had. So they're basically trying to win a championship in a way that no team has in a while. So that's going to be interesting, I think, when you're talking about them matching up defensively with pretty much any team, like I said.
Well, isn't that why they traded for Blake Griffin? Solve that problem. What's it do?
Yeah, he could take charges.
He can. He's actually played well for them. We shouldn't be mocking.
Yeah.
Brooklyn has played at its peak when it's been defensively. There's been a couple week stretches where they've been like a league average, maybe even slightly above league average defense. Just good enough effort, good enough hustle on that end to kind of make plays. And getting Kevin Durant back helps. He might actually be their best defender at this point. And all that said, if their defense can be average, that might be good enough. Speaking of defense, by the way, Chase, I was going to ask you about Washington, because their defense, which has been pretty wretched for much of the season and through all the injuries, it's actually been pretty good the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable, to be honest, because, you know, last year they had one of the worst defensive ratings in NBA history, and they really didn't do a whole lot to address the problem. Like, they brought in Russell Westbrook, who's a really good rebounder and a really good defensive rebounder, and I knew that would help a little bit. But then a lot of the other moves that they made were to their bench. It was like Raul Neto, who, if you look at defensive plus minus, is one of the best defensive point guards in the NBA, but, you know, you brought him in to be your second or third point guard. You already had Westbrook. You already had Ish Smith. How many minutes was he going to play? Robin Lopez was an upgrade defensively, but he was brought in to be a backup. So naturally, they struggled defensively for much of the season, but they've really turned things around. I mean, Alex Len was a tremendous addition defensively. I mean, if you look at like defensive field goal percentage against and some of the you know, the rim protection statistics beyond blocked shots. He's been really, really good. A guy who was just let go by the Raptors, and now the Raptors are chasing the Wizards in the playoff race, which is kind of ironic. And then Daniel Gafford has been an absolute revelation coming over from Chicago. I mean, he's the best rim protector I think they've had in many years. I mean, I think you'd have to go back, honestly, to like Brendan Haywood from the early to into mid-2000s, a guy who I do some pre- and post-game shows with at NBC. You know, he's just been incredible. He's the most athletic player on the team. He's 6'11". He hustles. He runs the floor from baseline to baseline very, very quickly. He can alter shots, block shots, get steals. You know, the other day he had 4 steals, 4 blocks. First player since Brendan Haywood in 17 years for this team to do that. So he's been a major difference maker. Joel Neto has played a much larger role than I thought he would have played. Yeah. And he's made a big difference. Russell Westbrook, you know, just comparing him to last year when they had Isaiah Thomas and Shabazz Napier, has just done a much better job of stopping the ball at the perimeter. So collectively, you know, you can go all the way back to like January 30th, they're a top 10 defense. And if you look at like their last 12, 13 games, they're top five, you know, they're top two or three actually in defensive rating. So the sample size is growing and it's gotten to a point where they're actually a pretty good defensive team, and they're arguably a better defensive team than they are on offense, which is, I think, something no one would have predicted, but they just haven't been able to make their threes this season. But they have been able to lately, you know, last 10, 11 games, they're a top 10 three-point shooting team, at least on when it comes to three-point percentage. And I think that has just helped their team in general, their net rating. It's added more space on offense. It's limited long rebounds that have led to transition points. So, yeah, they've collectively become a better defensive team, and I think it's just a lot of little tweaks. And if I were to point to one player as making a major difference, it would definitely be Daniel Gafford.
Yeah, Gafford's kind of one of those guys who just never quite fit in with what they were doing in Chicago. And I mean, Keith, do you have an idea of why he didn't fit in there? I mean, just, he never seemed to get the love from the coaching staff and the fit there. And obviously they're focused on, they had Wendell Carter Jr. and they had Markin and they had all these other guys they were trying out. They moved Gafford eventually, and he's thriving in this role in Washington.
Yeah, I think the previous staff was clearly it was Wendell Carter Jr. And then they got a little overly focused on Cristiano Felicio at times,
yes,
where you could have given basically any of the minutes he was going to get, you could have given to Gafford. And then it turned into, all right, well, if it's not going to be Felicio's not good enough, they started going to Thad Young as the small ball backup five and those kind of things. And then that really pushed Gafford down. And then I think with Billy Donovan, he was kind of in and out as they were evaluating the roster. Then clearly they made the trade for Vucevic, and that just kind of changed everything there. So yeah, it's great to see him go. And it's interesting, as I was thinking about it and looking at some stuff while Chase was talking, you never want to be happy about an injury, of course, but I think Thomas Bryant, who's not a very good defender, I think being out, that has really helped them, because now, Len is like, he's like a brick wall back there. It's, you know, guys just kind of come crashing in and he's just there. Robin Lopez has always been a pretty good defender. And then I think, oddly enough, going to the small lineups where they're playing three guards a lot in Beal, Westbrook, and Neto, I think that's made them quicker. And I think that's almost put Westbrook in a position where he's playing. Remember all the way back to the OKC season when Kevin Durant was out and Westbrook almost got that team into the playoffs when Durant was injured. And it was, he was just kind of everywhere all at once. He was just, you know, flying all over the court and making all sorts of plays. He's almost kind of back to being that kind of guy. And I think that is really helped. It's almost addition by subtraction a little bit there. They stumbled into some stuff out of necessity, and it's really worked out well. So yeah, they're going to be tough. And I think they're very interesting, because I do think they're going to get into the play-in. I don't think the Bulls or the Raptors will catch them. I think there's a better chance that they actually catch the Pacers and maybe move up to hosting one of those first play-in games. But after that, I don't know if, you know, I think Miami or Boston probably wins if they're in that first play-in game. And then I would put the Wizards maybe the next team that I would think of, depending on what happens with the Hornets health-wise, that, you know, it would not surprise me at all to see Washington claim that eighth seed and actually be in the actual playoffs when all is said and done.
You know, Kurt, I know you got a question here, but Keith, I just want to say thank you for shedding some light on what happened with Daniel Gafford in Chicago, because all of us in Washington are kind of observing him being like, okay, what's wrong with this guy? Like, why did the Bulls not feel like they could just stash him in their system as a prospect at 22, a guy who was a second round pick who seems to have the right attitude, the right instincts? You know, oftentimes you see guys his size who are super athletic and they just don't have any instincts, or they just seem like they have a bad disposition. This guy has none of that. And it's kind of like, I led an article with this. It kind of reminds me of this famous story from the NFL where Mike Shanahan, when he was coaching the Broncos, picked Brandon Marshall, a wide receiver, in the fourth round. And he went on, obviously, to have a fantastic career. Doesn't know anything about the NBA salary cap, by the way. I don't know if you guys saw that from Showtime. But he was like a borderline Hall of Fame wide receiver. And it was like the first day of minicamp, and Champ Bailey defended him in practice. And afterwards, he went up to Mike Shanahan and he was like, okay, so what's wrong with him? What did he do? Like, this guy is not a fourth round pick. And it's been like that here. It's like, this guy's exactly what the Wizards needed. Like, how did Chicago let this guy go when it's not like he was making a ton of money or, you know, something well publicized had happened? It's just a team gave up on a guy and he's just fit in perfectly here.
I think, though, sometimes you see a lot of teams do this. I mean, they drafted Wendell Carter in the lottery. They had, I mean, like you said, there was Felicio Hopes. They GMs get in their head and coaches get in their head, hey, we took this guy high. We really have to give this a chance. And other guys just kind of get lost in the shuffle because of that. It becomes about fit. And like you said, they wanted to – look, we should talk about this for a second. The Vucevic trade – should make them better than they are, right? They still haven't been as good as I expect them to, and part of that is now, you know, LaVine has missed, what, 7 games, I think it is now, with health and safety protocols. But that's still that move still strikes me as a, hey, Zach, please resign here move. Like, that seemed like a key. We're going to bring in a name all-star guy to keep our current all-star happy more than anything else.
Yeah, I feel like that was a Arturis Karnišević deal of, this is my team.
So you got that Eastern European background where you can just roll that off your tongue, man.
the Lithuanian, yeah, that's making my ancestors proud there with the Lithuanian. Funny aside story, our family, well, one of my aunts and uncles got very into tracing our family history when they traced it back to the immigration here to the United States from Lithuania. Our last family last name was Karnišević. When they couldn't understand it, they basically said, your last name is Smith now, and off they went. So that is a, you know, that's why that one's ingrained in my brain. But yeah, it is, I think that was the new front office saying, we're remaking this team. Yeah. This is going to be a team full of our guys. We're moving out the previous front office picks, where we're going to start moving in the direction of our guys. LaVine is a keeper. Young's a keeper. Satoransky's a keeper. We'll find out on Kobe White, what we want to do with that. Patrick Williams was clearly their first pick. And then it was, we can get an all-star center at a relatively low cost, because they may end up keeping their pick. It depends on, you know, where it falls in the lottery and in those kind of things. So I think that was the Bulls really kind of looking at it and saying, we have the chance to remake this. And I think part of what happened with Gafford is he gets, with the new front office, he gets caught up in the wash of, all right, we're going to make these moves. And that trade ultimately expanded into a three-team trade to get Daniel Theis in there from the Celtics. And I think they looked at that as, we can grab this guy who can be, I think their initial plan was our backup four. Now he's our backup five. Now he's starting at the four for them, and we can bring him in. Yeah, it's going to cost us Gafford, but he's not our draft pick anyway. And it's very easy to move on from guys you didn't draft when you're taking over. So I think that's what it was. As far as them being better, I think if you look at it talent wise, sure, they probably should be. But I thought it might take a while for this team to come together, because they made arguably one of the bigger swings at the trade deadline, as far as, all right, in the span of a day here, we're going to remake major parts of our rotation. And I always thought there was a chance that this was going to take a little while to come together and be a little bumpy. And they'd been playing kind of good going up to that, and then it got a little bumpy. Now LaVine is out, and now they're in trouble and may not even make the play-in.
Yeah, probably won't make the play-in. You also, Keith, touched on something that I mentioned I wanted to, or made a note of and wanted to touch on, which is the the small ball lineup, the three-guard lineup with Nieto and Beal and Westbrook, that really has thrived. And Chase, you've watched all of those minutes. What's worked about it?
Well, Keith makes a really smart point that it's made them quicker and allowed them to cover more ground on the perimeter, because three-point defense has been arguably their biggest problem all year, that and three-point shooting with their offense. But they've gotten a lot better at protecting the rim. You know, last year they gave up a really high percentage within 5 feet of the rim. I think it was the third highest in the NBA. And you know, you're right to note that Thomas Bryant was in there. He's a very offense-oriented player, one of the most efficient scorers in the league at his position, one of the most accurate three-point shooters at for a center. But defensively, he's not great, not a great rebounder. So that was the area that you felt like they could improve. And they're not allowing very many field goals within 5 feet of the rim this year. So they've done a better job of that. But just all season, they've been so bad at defending the three-point line. And I think part of it has been because with Denny Avdija and Rui Hachimura playing a lot of the minutes at the three and the four, those guys are really good players, and I think both of them are going to be really good long-term, but they're just not the quickest guys. They're both kind of a little bit bigger. They're fast. They're very fast in a straight line, but not the quickest from side to side. So I think now they're doing a better job of contesting threes, and that's been a big reason why their defense has been better. It's been Gafford, and also it's important to note their three-point percentage against it's just been a lot better. So, you know, it was a terrible combination for much of the season, not being able to shoot threes or defend the three-point line in an era that is defined in many ways by three-point shooting. But that's something that they have been able to correct, and I think the small ball lineup is part of it.
All right, we've kind of talked briefly about there being that upper tier in the East of, you know, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. The betting favorite to come out are the Nets, which makes sense because a lot of people are going to put money down on – there's a little bit of talent on that roster, right? Like, that's a loaded talent. It's got the names, and it's got guys who can create for themselves and others in the postseason. Their offense is obviously going to be phenomenal. But there's still that question. I'm even less worried about the chemistry than I am the defense. And then I also feel like, do you guys see this? Where it really is going to kind of come down to matchups. I think Brooklyn Philadelphia may struggle, may give Brooklyn more trouble than the Bucks do. Or do the Bucks have the defense to give Brooklyn enough trouble? Like, I'm really curious to see how these matchups shake out, and I don't really have a great – maybe it's just the shorter season. Maybe it's that I just don't trust anything the Bucks do in the regular season anymore, but I just don't have a feel for how this is all going to shake out.
Yeah, I think it's really important in the East to finish first.
Yeah.
So you don't have to beat both of the other teams, because I really struggle if they're at – moderate health, seeing anybody but the Nets, Sixers, Bucks, and then whoever being in the Eastern Conference semifinals. I just, you know, really have a hard time with that. So I think if you're the Nets, you want to finish first, because they'll overwhelm whoever the eighth seed is, no matter who it is, unless it's maybe Miami, you know, could maybe make it somewhat interesting, but I don't think they can score enough. So then they're right into the second round. And then the second round, you're getting the best of that second tier in theory. And I think they're still far better than that. While on the other side, you've got Philly and Milwaukee battling in what's probably a long series. And I'm with you. It is hard to trust the Bucks, right? I think a lot of us were bought in the bubble, and then it kind of all came crashing down, and Miami gave you the game plan, you know, shut Giannis down. But I do think Milwaukee this year has taken a lot of short-term losses for long-term gains.
Yeah.
I think they've experimented defensively. They're not living strictly in that drop coverage anymore. They're doing some switching. They're doing some other stuff. They have cut their rotation down to about 9 guys rather than it being 12 guys. 12 guys is great when you're playing in, you know, Cleveland on a Tuesday in February and you overwhelm them because your, you know, 8th through 12th guy is as good as their, you know, 4th through 8th guy, and you just completely end up blowing the doors off them. When you get in the playoffs, that's not going to happen. And it was a huge indictment on them when Mike Budenholzer openly came out and said, I can't play Giannis and Middleton 40 minutes a night, because they only played right around 30 in the regular season. It's just too far of a jump. This year, they're up closer to 35. So now you can push them up closer. So I think that's going to make Milwaukee a tougher team. I think the PJ Tucker addition, clearly, he had just like we talked about Blake Griffin earlier, clearly had a lot more left in the tank than what he was showing for Houston. I actually like Bobby Portis for them because I think he gives them a different kind of look as a big man, and then I think Drew Holiday gives them a defensive minded guard. So I think them and Philly can both cause Brooklyn a lot of different troubles, matchup wise. I still would give Brooklyn the advantage, assuming Durant, Harden, and Irving are all healthy, because I think they're just, that much better offensively, and I trust their ability to go get a basket at the end of a close game. But I think when games slow down in the playoffs, which they always do, no matter what the team's style of play is, they always slow down in the playoffs, it's going to be very interesting. I don't think Brooklyn's going to walk over people the way I think some people assume they will, even if they're at full health.
By the way, I'm with you on P.J. Tucker is a great pickup and has played better for them, but I kind of – and plus, by the way, might be another guy they can throw on Embiid for a stretch. Yeah. I mean, he can actually body him up a little bit.
Sometimes those guys bother Embiid more than anybody else too,
yeah,
because they get up in underneath him, and he doesn't like that. He doesn't like when he would almost rather bang with a big man, and really go, kind of almost face to face with him. Whereas a guy like Tucker is going to get up in underneath him. He's going to be banging and pushing on his legs. Embiid has not historically liked that. That's why, as funny as it sounds, Boston has had some success with switching guys like Marcus Smart,
yep,
onto Embiid in the past, because he doesn't like those smaller defenders up in underneath him.
Yeah. But the other part I was going to say, and out of all that too, is that I think I will take Drew Holiday's decision-making and shooting and defense over Eric Bledsoe's every day of the week. Like, that is such an upgrade in a playoff setting. It's been fine during the regular season, and you can ask the fans in New Orleans how they feel about Eric Bledsoe right about now, but in the playoff series, I think that's just going to be huge for them. Chase, do you see that too, or do you think – or how do you see that top three shaking out?
Well, I do think that if Brooklyn is healthy, that they're going to get out of the East. I just think that their offense, between James Harden and Kevin Durant, they have two of the greatest scorers of all time, right? Three or four or five greatest scorers of all time, and maybe you go to six. I don't know. I mean, these guys are two absolute legends that are going to be known for a long, long time for their scoring. And even if they can't get stops, I mean, I think that's ultimately going to come back to bite them. But I think they could probably get through the Eastern Conference bracket, just because, like you guys say, they're going to be able to get bucket after bucket late in the game. Now, if they are missing one of those players, I don't think they get out of the East. And I'm a little bit higher on Milwaukee than other people. I know they're maybe not as good as they were last year, but they still have a really good defense. They still have the best two-way player in the league, you could say, with Giannis winning the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year last year, and they can really shoot the three. They score a lot of points. I mean, they have a good offense too. So I think they have a chance. Philly and Milwaukee, if every team is at full strength, it's going to be a really interesting contrast, just offense versus defense in the extremes. Particularly with Philly, their defense is so good, and Brooklyn's offense is so good. It's going to be really, on one side of the court, you're going to have a great team, and on the other side, you're going to have a great team, and it's going to be a complete situation of opposites. But I think if they're healthy, I would go with Brooklyn. I think if Brooklyn is a little bit banged up, I think I would pick Milwaukee, actually.
Can I say this about Brooklyn, and see if you guys agree with me? And I feel like I'm stealing a Zach Lowe line here, but it's less about Kyrie Irving. It's Harden and Durant. If those two are healthy, their offense is going to click. And then everything else has just got to fit in around them. And I don't want to take anything away from Irving's ability to create shots. I believe he has hit one of the biggest clutch shots in the history of the NBA Finals. But Durant and Harden are the guys who are going to really make that offense. I mean, just watching it when Durant came back from the latest thigh bruise, 33 points the first night, and you're like, man, their offense just flows. Just he gets in there, and it's just smooth.
Well, Kurt, the stat I can't ignore is that when they were at their peak this season, they had the best offensive rating in NBA history.
Yeah.
You know, like if everything comes together, that's just going to be extremely tough to deal with, especially in this era where, you know, offense is king and you know, the rules are kind of written to favor the offense. So I think if, yeah, Irving, you know, nothing to take away from him. He's just not on the level, of course, of Durant and Harden. If you have Durant and Harden and they're healthy, you're literally talking about having two of the greatest scorers of all time. And no matter how good your defense is, that's going to be extremely difficult to handle, especially with the way Harden can massage the game with the refs and just with the versatility Durant has, where when he's at his peak, there's probably no one in NBA history who could guard him.
Yeah, when I watched that Durant comeback game, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. This guy, you literally missed, you know, what, a week or two or whatever it was, and he just rolls in here and he tosses in casually 30 points like it's nothing off the bench. It's unreal. But I think what raised Brooklyn's ceiling maybe more than anything was they were only a few games into Harden being there, and I think Durant may have been out at this time, but it was when Kyrie Irving said, yep, You run the offense. You're the point guard. I will play off you. And that was what I think was, and I had some of the concerns of, you know, how are these three guys going to fit together and all these things. Well, Kyrie grew up in the NBA playing off of LeBron James and knows how to do that. Durant played off of, you know, the Warriors' other players and knows how to do that. Durant may be the most plug-and-play player in NBA history, because you can either say, stand there and we're just going to get you open jump shots and he's just going to drain them because he's so big, no one can contest him. Or, hey, we need you to really get the ball and make it happen on your own. And then Harden, for all the criticisms of Harden that anybody may have about the way he plays and, you know, he takes a lot of shots and those things, he is a very willing passer. This is a guy who, you know, piled up assists playing with not always the greatest talent in Houston. So I didn't have super big concerns other than I don't love Irving and Harden as off-ball shooters. I don't love their spot-up stuff. Isn't great. But when Irving very willingly said, all right, Harden, you run the offense, I'll play off you, that removed a huge number of potential issues that could have sunk this whole thing. And that's why, you know, I am very high on their upside. I find it where I think with Brooklyn, I'm going to probably fall into the trap of spending more time trying to think about reasons that they could lose than just admitting that they're probably going to win.
I think we all do that with teams once we feel like it's a bit inevitable. We look for a way. We haven't talked about maybe the best story. Obviously, if you live in New York, the only story in the NBA right now. The New York Knicks have look, it's been a phenomenal turnaround under Tom Thibodeau. They have defended well pretty much all season long. Nerlens Noel had a renaissance on that end. But more than that, they're just – that's a team on a string. I mean, it's not a team where you came into the season saying, you know, oh, they have Joel Embiid or Rudy Gobert in the paint, or they have, you know, the Marcus Smarts of the world who can defend on the perimeter. None of that. And they've been – fantastic defensively, and you know, like I said, they do have Nerlens Noel making some blocks, but they've been on a string. Offensively, it's been kind of the Julius Randle show, although they've certainly gotten more out of RJ Barrett and Reggie Bullock of late. And Quickley's out there. It's been a phenomenal story. They're going to finish maybe in that 4 or 5 slot, but are they built for the playoffs? Or when you slow down Randle in a, because you can aim your scheme at him, Chase, do the Knicks slow down? Are they very beatable?
Well, I do think their ceiling is only so high at this point. You know, I think that their ceiling is probably the second round. I don't see a scenario where they get into the conference finals, but that's fine. I mean, I think if you told anyone involved with the Knicks or who roots for them, I mean, maybe not everyone who roots for them because some of their fans are a little delusional, but they would take that. A second round playoff appearance this year is not what any of us expected. So that would definitely classify for as a successful season. Even if they make the playoffs, it'd be a successful season. I mean, it's been a while since we saw a Knicks team this good. And they've got a lot of players on their roster that present upside. So I think like the long-term outlook is good. And a big reason for that for me is RJ Barrett. You know, I was huge on him coming out of the draft. I really liked him. And obviously he didn't have the greatest rookie year. He shot a low percentage, but he's really raised his efficiency this year, and he's become a really good defender. And a lot of the things that people said about him coming out of the draft and going into Duke, we've seen it. You know, he's got a really competitive mentality. And one thing that always stands out to me is last year during his rookie season, his trainer, Drew Hanlon, was at a Wizards game. And I've gotten to know Drew because, you know, he's Bradley Beal's trainer and Joel Embiid's trainer, but also Kelly Oubre. So there's a few players on the Wizards that he trains in the offseason. I remember asking him, like, you know, I've heard this reputation of RJ Barrett that, you know, he's got that sort of killer instinct, that mentality that, you know, that could be compared to a Kobe or a Jordan or something like that. And he was like, there's absolutely no question that he has that. So I just love the makeup. He's like he's got great size for his position. He's very athletic. He's got the pedigree of his father, right? It runs Canada basketball. He seems like a really smart guy. And you're telling me he's got that type of competitive edge? Like, it just seems like what doesn't this guy have that tells you he's going to be a star someday? So I think he's going to be a star, and I think whatever his ceiling ultimately ends up being will be the Knicks ceiling. But certainly they're a team that you probably don't want to face in the first round. But I do think that their ceiling is ultimately going to be limited because they're relying on a lot of young players that haven't fully tapped into their potential yet.
I want to add on to a couple of things that Chase said there, because I think you made some good points. I'll start with RJ Barrett. He went to high school at Montverde Academy, which is just down the road from where I live here in Orlando. So I got to know him somewhat well as see him play quite a bit. And he is now the player that everybody liked going into Duke. I don't think that Duke experience went great for him. I think he had some struggles there. I think it really very quickly, while he was healthy, became the Zion Williamson show. And I think Barrett struggled some with that. And now, or then let's go to his rookie year, rather, that roster made no sense. It was an absolute jumbled mess. You had guys overlapping in position. There was no shooting. There was barely any playmaking. And they basically threw him the ball and said, good luck, kid, make it happen. And it was just no rookie in the history of the game would have been successful with that group, just the way they were built. Now, what I say with the Knicks is it is a testament to building a roster that makes sense, even if it's not filled with stars, and hard work. And playing hard every night, the difference that those things can make. And that is what we have seen now with the Knicks. This is a group that goes as hard as I think any team does every single game. I question, is it built to last, right? Like every Tibbs team has looks pretty good out of the gate and then has some struggles. So I always, you know, I worry about that. And then when I see, you know, RJ Barrett recently playing like 45 minutes in a game, I'm like, oh, good Lord, this poor kid's career is going to, you know, lose a year or two by each year he plays with Tibbs. But in the end, I think the Knicks needed to have a season where they just took an incremental step forward. Even if they lose in the first round, but it's competitive, what they can now do is go in and say, we've got RJ Barrett, we've got Julius Randle, we have a good coach, we've got some role players that know what they're doing, and boy, do we have a whole boatload of cap space. That is infinitely more attractive to free agents than any pitch they have made in the last couple of years, which was based around, hey, you come here and bring two of your buddies and then maybe we'll be pretty good. Now they can actually go in and say, hey, we've got some guys. We want you to come in and be the guy to lift us to the next level. And that's absolutely huge for them.
Yeah. You can't get LeBron to Los Angeles if you haven't built the foundation that existed with Lonzo and Brandon Ingram and Hart and Kuzma, all the guys, obviously a lot of which they traded, but a team that you came to and said, well, there's potential here. And even if we don't win now, we can turn these players into, obviously did the same thing with Brooklyn, right? Until you build a foundation, you can't get Durant and Irving to go there and ultimately Harden without having the Spencer Dinwiddie era, Well, I guess that era isn't over yet. He thinks he'll be back for the playoffs.
Or LeBron back to Cleveland, right?
Yeah, exactly. Without Kyrie.
You needed to have, Kyrie and Tristan Thompson looking like, quality NBA players. And the Knicks finally have that now. It's not, hey, we're starting all over fresh with you and nothing. Now it's, hey, we've got a couple guys. And, it's a little unfortunate that it comes in, a historically bad free agent class. But as I've had to continually remind people over and over again, it's really kind of funny. Cap space doesn't have to be used to sign players. You can even use it to trade for guys. Yeah. You know, and we know that there's going to be players available on the trade market. So I think the Knicks are set up to turn this into at least 3-4 years of sustainable success, if not longer, more so than they have been at any point in maybe the last 15, 20 years almost. Yeah.
We'll have to look at those. We'll have to look at those Bulls teams of yesteryear to see who else Tibbs can trade for.
Yeah, I think he's running out of them almost. Yeah. It was getting a little low on that list.
Keith, do you want to spend 5 minutes just pissing off Chase, and we'll talk about how Bradley Beal can be a Nick?
Oh man, you know what's funny? Chase probably knows this. He's probably seen me go on there and do it. One of the first things I try to do, because right, Celtics fans are obsessed with Bradley Beal because he's
That's not the only fan base, for the record.
Absolutely not. But he's Jason Tatum's buddy, right? And they have both openly talked about, you know, wanting to play together. And the first thing that I do when it comes up is I'm like, okay, you explain to me how, because the first thing you do is say, but it can't be Tatum, Brown, or, you know, three other young guys that they randomly love on the roster. Oh, okay. So you just finished explaining to me why Kemba Walker is always hurt and stinks, but the Wizards should trade Bradley Beal for him. Okay. That makes about, you know, a lot of logic there. So I try to do everything I can, especially when a player has come out and said, I don't want to go anywhere. I try very hard to tell people, stop dreaming about this. The minute the guy says, I'm ready, you know, trade me, but now the floodgates are open. Go nuts. You know, dream, go crazy. But yeah, I unfortunately, Kurt, I would have to decline your invitation on that one, because I hate when people do that to fans of teams, and, you know, just bug them up and down with, you know, hey, we want your player, but here, take all of our crap for him, because you know what? He's really not that good.
Yeah, exactly. It's the logistics of pulling off a trade that become, you know, you know, again, I live out in Los Angeles. Anytime anybody who's even mediocre comes up, suddenly there's a picture of him in a Laker jersey in my timeline. And I'm like, all right, forget it. I give up. All right.
Yeah, that was why they were so easily fooled by the photoshops of the fake Lakers podcaster, because they've seen so many photoshops of Lakers players in Lakers uniforms over the year that they just believe anything.
All right, well, I got to put together a fake podcast and finish this one up, and I know Keith's got somewhere to be. So, guys, thanks for taking the time and doing this. We didn't get to the Atlanta Hawks. Meh, it'll be fine. We'll spend a whole podcast discussing Trey's defense next time around. So, Keith, thanks again for doing this. Again, you can find Keith at, you want to try to list everywhere they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Yahoo Sports, Real GM, Celtics blog as part of SB Nation. You can find me on Locker Room every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, hosting live chats on Locker Room. And then you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA.
All right. And Chase, of course, he's at NBC Sports. You can see him on NBC Sports Washington. You can read his stuff, NBC Sports Washington. Your social media is?
At Chase Hughes NBCS on Twitter.
All right. Thanks again for doing this, guys. Look forward to doing it again and talking more as we get closer to the playoffs. There'll be more PBT podcasts later this week. An interesting one. Dan Feldman is bringing in Tony Jones and Dwayne Rankin, and they are talking Suns and Jazz out west. So that'll be later in the week. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with more PBT podcasts soon.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot, and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.